Hello, my name is Stuart Cameron, and welcome to the second in a series of nanotech podcasts sponsored by Nanotechnology Victoria, produced and hosted by azonano.com. In this edition, we have five key stakeholders who discuss with me the crucial issues surrounding the debate on the implications for health, safety, and the environment of the nanotech revolution. A representative from an environmental pressure group, a leading trade unionist, a risk assessor from the insurance industry, an ethics philosopher, and a leading toxicologist give us their thoughts and concerns on nanotech safety. Is there a risk of a nanotech disaster? Is it ethical for us to be proceeding with some aspects of nanotechnology that may profoundly change human life? What are the risks in the workplace? Let's hear first from a committed environmental campaigner with a special interest in nanotechnology. Georgia Miller, why does the Friends of the Earth have an interest in nanotechnology in the first place?
Nanotechnology is forecast to literally reshape our world from the atom up. It's quite amazing to even try and comprehend the scale of change that nanotechnology is predicted to bring. It's predicted to transform every aspect of industry with large-scale associated economic disruption. It's forecast to increasingly blur the boundaries between living and non-living material, to profoundly change the way we relate to the natural world, and even to transform what it means to be human. On top of that, nanomaterials that are already in products found on supermarket shelves are understood to present serious new toxicity risks for both human health and the environment. And when you look at all of those issues together, you understand that nanotechnology raises some pretty serious public policy questions.
Georgia, can you give me some specific examples of the use of nanotechnology in consumer products today and the risks that might lie therein?
One of the things we're really concerned about is the use of fullerenes in things like anti-aging creams and moisturisers. Now, fullerenes, otherwise known as buckyballs, are made of 60 or 70 carbon atoms. They're a hollow sphere, and they're being used in a number of products that are now for sale in the sort of top end of cosmetics counters. We're concerned that fullerenes have been linked to really serious oxidative stress. There has been a study published which showed that they can cause lipid peroxidation in the brains of fish. We've also seen them causing oxidative stress to kidney cells in in vitro experiments, and we've seen recently a study which demonstrated that they can be taken up through flexed skin. So we're very concerned that fullerenes, which are substances which have raised a lot of alarm bells in the preliminary scientific studies which have looked at them, are being released to market, are currently available with no requirement for manufacturers to conduct safety testing, and similarly no requirement for manufacturers to list the presence of fullerenes on ingredients lists so that consumers can make an informed choice about whether or not they wish to use them. Another product that we're really concerned about is nanosilver. Now, in its nanoparticle form, silver is very highly toxic. It's been linked to damage to brain cells in vitro experiments, also damage to stem cells and liver cells in mammalian in vitro experiments. And yet we're seeing nanosilver incorporated into a whole range of household appliances, everything from refrigerators to vacuum cleaners and air conditioners. We're also seeing nanosilver incorporated into things like cling wrap that people use to wrap their food products, where there is a real risk that the silver particles will migrate from the cling wrap into the food. So this is another example of a product about which we have quite serious concerns.
What would the Friends of the Earth blueprint look like for an informed debate taking into account all of the interests of all the stakeholder groups?
Given the scale of change that nanotechnology is predicted to bring to every aspect of our lives, we think it's actually really important that we move beyond calling for a debate to calling for public involvement in decision making. And the second part of that is that there's no point calling for decision making about the introduction of a technology after it's been introduced. So we're calling for the brakes to be put on the further commercial release of products that contain nanomaterials and nanodevices, for there to be a moratorium until such time as we've had laws in place to protect public health, workers' health, environmental safety. And until we've had room and resources provided for groups of the general community to be involved in decision making.
That was Georgia Miller from the Friends of the Earth with some strong views on current nanotech risks. Is it time for a moratorium on nanotech developments? Do the risks outweigh the benefits? Let's now turn to another key stakeholder who represents the interests of the health and safety of the Australian workforce. How does Steve Mullins of the Australian Council of Trade Unions feel about the current state of play? Steve Mullins, the ACTU has been working with Standards Australia on nanotechnology recently. Can you tell us a little bit more about that involvement with Standards Australia?
Standards Australia set up a technical working group to develop an Australian standard on nanotechnology and the health and safety implications of nanotech, along with a few other things, but the health and safety issues are my focus.
What are some of the specific concerns that the ACTU has about the use of nanotechnology in a manufacturing environment or in a commercial environment?
Well, there's the health impacts on workers. The structure of nanoparticles, nanopowders, nanotubes, as obviously they're very small, and they have a massive surface which can absorb other toxins and penetrate the skin, transported into the body. We take our lessons from what happened with the asbestos issue. We're looking at the health impacts of a long latency disease, potentially being created by nanoparticles. We strongly need to look at how to regulate, how to stop exposure to nanoparticles. And the thing that we want is, instead of putting workers' health and safety as a secondary consideration, it should be up front and centre. And I still don't see that out of governments around the world, but also in Australia. Governments are not not acting on this issue as quickly as they would in other safety and health issues. Maybe due to the fact that it's not a barbecue stopper. It has an element of sci-fi about it. And when nanotechnology is discussed, it's in that sort of, the whiz-bang IT kind of latest movie, rather than what are the health impacts. And so they kind of can get away with it a little bit at the moment. I think that it's an extraordinarily dangerous path to take, and we have a lesson to be learned from the asbestos issue, where we allowed production, manufacturer and use of asbestos in Australia for decades, and now we are suffering the horrible, horrible diseases causing tens of thousands of people to lose their lives through basically government apathy at the time, and also industry's greed. We have the opportunity now, and governments do, as do industry and the unions and NGOs, to not allow such a disaster to happen again. So what I see is inaction from government, not taking the issue particularly seriously, preferring instead to listen to industry's push to grow and make a few bucks, make many thousands of dollars.
So what would the ACTU like to see happen from industry and from government in this respect?
We need to adhere to the basic principles of health and safety. We've got to develop and improve hazard identification, assessment and control mechanisms. We've got to develop exposure standards to protect workers. And they've got to be lower than those currently applied to larger toxic material. And this is a combination of government, industry, and so it's got to be done in a tripartite way that we all have input into how these things are developed. There needs to be health and safety regulations enacted to address the nanomaterials specifically, nanoparticles specifically. Enforce those exposure standards through an active inspectorate. We find over and over again that you can create the most beautifully worded legislation, but if there's not an inspectorate to enforce that legislation, workers' lives will be put at risk. There's no incentive for business to comply. So we, an active inspector, well-resourced, needs to be created.
Does the ACTU have a position on the call for a moratorium on the commercialisation of nanotech?
Look, we would consider a moratorium, but I would put my energy into a moratorium if I knew that it would work. I don't want to back a losing horse, so I'm not. I don't think that we should discard it altogether. I think that there is enough concern out there and the health impacts to suggest that that's not a bad idea. But at the moment, I think that there's the Department of Industry, Tourism and Resources putting together their report, and I'm having a look at how they're responding to that report and how active they get into helping, resolve the issues of the health impacts on workers. Also, the Stands Australia. I think there's a few things going on. I will watch closely and then decide perhaps if the moratorium is perhaps the better way to proceed. But at this stage, it's on the table, but I'm not going to call for it as yet.
So while there's no call for a nanotech moratorium from Steve Mullins of the ACTU, there is a strong consensus with the Friends of the Earth position on workplace and environmental safety issues. Perhaps the cynics out there would expect views such as this from a trade union representative and an environmental campaigner. Well, what's the nanotech view from the big end of town and the insurance business? I asked Angus Robinson, the Business Development Manager of CGU Safety and Risk Services, part of Insurance Australia Group, about what the insurance industry considers the risks to be associated with nanotechnology.
Nanotechnology, I think, is an emerging interest in the insurance business. I think that the three major areas on the radar at the moment for insurance in terms of risk management are climate change, which is the big one, secondly, pandemics, and then thirdly, nanotechnology. So those are the three emerging risks we're looking at in terms of risk management, and particularly my group. So nanotechnology obviously has a very broad and wide encompassing term that relates to a broad range of technologies and applications. So I think where we fit in terms of insurance and in terms of risk management is to provide that platform for innovation, but also providing that platform to manage risks so we can move that technology forward, so we can gain the benefits from the technology, but also ensure that the risk is managed well.
What are some of the risks of the use of nanotechnology, the commercialisation of nanotechnology that you've identified so far?
I think the risks are a fewfold. I think one of the major risks is the lack of knowledge around nanotechnology. Obviously, nanotechnology being very broad, it's hard to put your finger on one particular risk for the term nanotechnology. But I think it's generally accepted that there's a bit of a knowledge gap in terms of what the health effects are and what the environmental effects are of nanotechnology. So I think that's something that needs to be addressed in terms of managing risk. I think also, in terms of specific risks, I think it's been identified that there is a potential deleterious effect of nanoparticles or ultrafine particles in the air, or being released into the air and then being ingested or inhaled. So I think that's something that needs to be investigated as well. Also, just on that, the fact that there's a bit of a knowledge gap around nanotechnology, there's also a knowledge gap around the control. So the fact that the knowledge gap affects risk assessment also affects control. So if you can't measure nanoparticles in the air, you can't control it. You can't control something you can't measure. So there's another risk, I think, in terms of nanotechnology, is the ability to just measure it in terms of control measures. In terms of insurance industry, I think there's three areas that we're definitely looking at in terms of risk. One is obviously workers' compensation insurance, so that's around individuals being affected by nanotechnology at their workplace and having health effects. The second is around product liability, so product recalls due to defects or some unknown cause of recall in the nanotechnology sphere. And I think the final one, and probably lesser so, is the property insurance, which obviously nanotechnology when you manipulate materials at the atomic or molecular level, you can change the material properties. So, for instance, gold, you can have gold as in a bulk material in your teeth, and it's quite inert. But if I was to manipulate gold in the nanostructural or molecular level, you can make it quite reactive. So all that regulation and infrastructure and assessment around materials, such as MSDSs, assessments, has to be changed in terms of dealing with nanoparticles or nanotechnology itself, rather than using the bulk material as a assessment for controls.
Well, that's further support from Angus Robinson and the insurance community for the need to increase the nanotechnology regulatory framework. Let's now turn to the ethical issues surrounding nanotech. As members of the community, should we not be asking if we want the potential benefits that nanotechnology can bring? What if nanotechnology allowed us to live for 200 years? What are the ethical issues to be considered? What are some of the possible scenarios for the development of nanotech that we should be considering now for the benefit of future generations? And is the media being responsible in its coverage of nanotechnology? Dr. Rob Sparrow, you're a lecturer in the Centre for Human Bioethics at Monash University. What's your interest in nanotechnology?
For me, the big question is how the public has a say in developments which are purportedly going to change the way they live. For me, that's the most important question. I think there are some ethical issues about distributional justice and about ensuring that whatever benefits do accrue as a result of new technologies are equitably distributed. And I think there are some issues to do with medical enhancement and environmental change as well. But, I mean, there's a lot covered by the term nanotechnology, and it's when we start to look at individual technologies that we start to look in a bit more detail about the ethical issues they raise.
We saw recently in the media the beginnings of a bioethical debate with respect to stem cell research, and a very interesting parliamentary debate ensued. What will it take to get the sort of visibility for nanotechnology that some of those other bioethical issues managed to garner over recent months?
I think there's two ways that might happen. I think there's probably a good way and a bad way, and unfortunately I think the bad way is much more likely. In the best of all possible worlds, I think all parties involved in debates about nanotechnology would really call for quite a thoroughgoing and structured public debate now, with the real option of putting some controls in place. The alternative scenario is that there'll be a disaster. There'll be a high-profile public disaster involving a nanotechnology. Something will occur, a toxic spill or a product will be released, and we will discover that, in fact, we didn't know what we were doing, that these products were not as safe as we thought, and people will get very sick or will die. And in those circumstances, then there'll be a public outcry and there'll be a public debate, but I suspect it'll be a much less productive debate in those circumstances. But unfortunately, the history of regulatory interventions into technology, often these interventions only occur after there is a disaster of that sort. So, I mean, I think there's a bit of a choice here. I think if we continue to release products without, knowing all their toxicological properties, without knowing their environmental impacts, or if we continue to transform people's daily lives so that they just feel that the world's speeding up, they're more anxious, they have less time, then at some point the public might say enough. I can only hope we go the other route and have a debate now and be prepared to take our time. I do think that in Australia, these are, in a sense, not urgent issues. Well, we could slow down. We could spend some time making a choice. It's not clear to me that nanotechnology offers any solutions to problems which are urgent and to which there's no alternative solutions using existing technologies. If that's the case, then it seems to me we could afford to have the sort of more thoroughgoing debate that I've been talking about.
You talked about the need for public engagement. Public engagement on these very difficult and complex topics has proved difficult in the past. What, in your mind, is the best way to bridge that gap between the scientists, the black artists, if you like, the regulatory bodies, the politicians and elected representatives and the general public?
Look, I'll say something general and then I'll say something specific. I actually think in general the public are capable, ordinary people are capable of contributing productively to these debates. It's true that the details of the technology may be beyond people without specialist training, but a question... So I don't know what the toxicological properties of nanoscale titanium is, but if somebody... So I can't have a debate about the safety of a product that might... contain that material. But if somebody said, look, in order to have your yogurt have a use-by date of an extra 3 days, are you prepared to put something which is completely... We've got very little idea about what it's going to do in the human body. Do you want to do that? I'm quite capable of making a judgment saying, look, I'd rather go down to the supermarket and replace my yogurt. Or I'd rather, you know, iron my clothes. Then face these kinds of risks. So at one level, I think the deep issues raised by nanotechnology, the public are quite capable already of saying some very sensible and important things, which often seem to get forgotten in the technical debate. I mean, I think people who are involved with and excited about a technology often lose sight of the big picture.
The media has been used for 50 years as a very quick and easy way to get information, accurate or not, out to the public. How would you rate the media's performance thus far on the issue of nanotechnology? Do you find that they're informing the debate in a positive way, or that there is sensationalism and perhaps misrepresentation of nanotechnology?
I think both. I mean, I don't think the media is doing a terrible job on nanotechnology. And again, I think there's a certain amount of self-delusion within some of the sort of scientific and research communities about what happens when one talks in public. For instance, my experience of going to conferences on nanotechnology is you'll go to a conference which is full of fine and good papers at a level of detail about toxicology, about risk, about surface chemistry. And then the newspaper will report on the possibility that we're all going to have nanoscale robots swimming around in our bloodstream. We're all going to live to be 300 and, you know, robots are going to do the dishes for us. The media is not making this stuff up. They are capable of presenting the most sensational claims, because when people wish to talk up a technology, they make those claims themselves. Often, for instance, there's a remarkable disjunction between the images that you see on the PowerPoint presentations at these conferences and the content of the paper. So the content of the paper will be very dry and perhaps underwhelming in some circumstances, but the images will be fabulous and have these tremendous sort of wheels of molecules cranking around, talking about nano engines. And so I think the media is picking up on material which is actually presented by other participants in the debates. And then, of course, you don't want your newspaper story or your radio story to be boring. You want to give people a reason to read it, so you will present the most sensational claims.
Well, that's food for thought from The Ethicist. Would you try nanotech yogurt with an enhanced sell-by date if there were risks? Will it really take a nanotech disaster before government ramps up efforts to guarantee the safety of all nanotech-based products? In our final interview, let's bring in the scientist who sits at the centre of the health, safety and environmental debate. Professor Paul Wright is from the Toxicology Department of RMIT University in Victoria. Paul Wright, we're now starting to see a debate about nanotechnology and its safety or otherwise, and there are certain groups who are claiming that it's potentially hazardous or even dangerous. Are we right to be concerned about the health effects of nanotechnology, or is this just fear-mongering?
Well, I believe that we should be concerned because we are now only starting to understand the importance of such increased surface area of these very small particles and how it relates to increased toxicity. Chemists have understood this for many years. They used very small particles and increased the reactivity of various elements. So they've been using it to synthesize things. But now we're in a situation where the particles have got to be so small that in the nanoscale, they can be breathed in and move throughout the body. And very recent research is actually showing that some nanoparticles can penetrate the skin. So you don't just have to breathe it in. You could actually have them passing through the skin and into the body. Now, as to where many of these particles go once they're in the body, very little is known about this. How long do they stay in the body? Again, a big unknown for many particles. And also, we don't know their life cycle once they pass out of the body into the environment. Do they come back to us in the food chain? And there's so many different aspects there that need to be addressed. So I do not think it's fear-mongering. In fact, it's just taking a responsible attitude to a new technology. So far, we've seen these products, nanotechnology-related products, already coming out onto the market. We think it's time to actually do appropriate risk-benefit assessment. You can't do that without some basic knowledge that needs to be funded and obtained. If we can understand which nanoparticles are of concern, then we can follow them up more closely. A number of nanoparticles will be of minimal concern, like nanogold. Nanogold is already being looked at for a number of applications. Very low toxicity. Nanosilver is another metal that's being used. Colloidal silver and nanosilver in the past have been known to have antibiotic properties, so they're being incorporated into things like wound dressings, but also as detergents for washing clothes. And it's interesting that the US EPA are now quite concerned and are asking companies that they should do proper toxicity testing to see what happens when we finish washing our clothes and all this stuff gets dumped out into the environment. So I think we are right to be concerned. There are just there's not enough known about many nanoparticles, how they behave in our body or in the environment, and their health effects.
Is it possible to differentiate different nanotechnologies or groups of technologies and say that there is a greater or lesser risk amongst certain of these nanotechnologies, and then perhaps use that as a basis for some regulatory framework?
Well, as I've alluded to before, I don't think the potential toxicity from all nanoparticles is the same. We know that nanogold is of low toxicity, but we also know that some silica nanoparticles are very toxic and can cause long-term health effects. So they cannot be treated equally, and they can't be classed on their chemical content because it's their physical nature and their large surface area that contributes a lot to the toxicity. One final comment possibly to make here again is about this engineering of nanoparticles. We can actually potentially engineer nanoparticles to be less toxic also, but we need to know more about how nanoparticles behave and their surface characteristics in the body and the health effects so that we can engineer them potentially to be less toxic. So this is an important stage, I think. We can actually use this knowledge to potentially avoid some health problems later down track.
Given that so little is known about the toxicity of nanoparticles, do you support the idea of a moratorium on the commercialisation of nanotechnology and specifically nanoparticles?
That's an interesting question. Specifically, as one of the major international documents on this area, the Royal Society in the UK appeared to support the approach of a moratorium as one of their conclusions, and some of the other scientific groups internationally are also talking about moratorium. My personal view is that if a moratorium is imposed now on nanotechnology developments and commercialisation, that will send a major negative signal to the public, which might not be appropriate. However, being a toxicologist, I'm concerned about technologies and chemicals and particles being out there where people have, the risk of being exposed, and we don't know potentially how they're going to be affected. So to avoid a moratorium, government and industry should be collaborating right now to make sure that whatever is out there now is tested and the appropriate information goes to the public to avoid a full-blown moratorium being called later on. Do you see? A moratorium now would give a negative message when some of the particles might not need to be controlled in that way. But if nothing is done, the situation will just, I think, get worse, and eventually a moratorium might be called just from public pressure. And I don't think the nanotechnology industry in Australia can afford that. So if the Australian government is going to be serious about supporting this new burgeoning industry, and Australia has great potential with our scientific and research capability to definitely be a player internationally in this area, then I think we need to at least check out the particles that we're using here in Australia first. Things like the metal oxides that are being used in sunblock, which personally I think are of lower concern than some other particles being incorporated into a range of other applications.
Paul Wright, thank you very much for your time today.
You're welcome. Thank you, Stuart.
So what conclusions can we draw from the panel of experts and stakeholders we've heard from in this podcast? Certainly there is a concerned consensus opinion that the science of small particles poses risks in relation to health and safety and the environment. Risks, it would appear, that are not yet fully covered by the relevant governmental agencies. In the first podcast in the series, we heard of a range of nanotechnologies that are helping to fight a range of debilitating diseases. Nanosensors that are aiding in the purification of water, the use of nanobiosilicon for targeted cancer drugs, and a dendrimer-based gel for the treatment of HIV. Is the nanotech future simply too bright? Is the ethical option to turn out the light until we've considered where this technology is taking us? Even if it was a practical option, should we be halting all nanotech science now? These are important questions, and this is the time to be addressing them. Perhaps the most important insight from these interviews is that nanotechnologies cover a broad field, and that simple actions may not be possible until the field is better defined. It's also very encouraging that the major interest groups involved were willing and able to present their views and to discuss these in a public forum. That can only be positive. For those of you who'd like to delve deeper into this subject, visit nanovic.com.au and azonano.com for further information and links to the websites of the podcast interviewees, Friends of the Earth, the ACTU, NanoSafe Australia, and insurer IAG. I'm Stuart Cameron. Thank you for listening.